Welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. I'm Naomi Fowler. Coming up later, tax inspectors without borders.
We would like to see a situation where we have helped developing countries to build and recover billions of tax revenue from multinationals that have woven circles around governments, to build capacity and skills of those tax administrations to the point where the multinationals know that we have a level playing field, whether you operate in Britain, whether you operate in Chad or in Bolivia. We want to see them practice in the same manner, paying the rightful fair tax wherever they're operating from.
That's Tax Inspectors Without Borders, a bold new initiative helping bring back tax revenue and change lives. But first, here's a Tax Justice News Roundup for this month. Secrecy havens should be cut off from the global financial and economic system. That's according to US economist Joseph Stiglitz. He launched a report this month prompted by the Panama Papers leaks, recommending, among other things, that it should be illegal to open a bank account in a secretive tax haven, to set up an offshore corporation in one, or for banks to send or receive money there. Here he is presenting his report findings to the European Parliament's Committee on Money Laundering, Tax Avoidance and Tax Evasion.
This is the darker side of globalization. There has to be a comprehensive global approach with essentially zero tolerance for secrecy. And that means, of course, that secrecy has to be attacked globally. Having said that it has to be attacked globally, I believe that Europe alone can have a very significant impact, particularly in the context of what is happening politically in the United States. It is particularly important that Europe take up the responsibility of exposing and making sure that these secrecy havens are not able to continue playing the role of undermining global society in the way that they have.
And yes, this month saw the election of a new president, Donald J. Trump. We'll discuss what that means for tax justice later. The European Union is deciding on the criteria for inclusion on its tax haven blacklist. Rather conveniently, no EU countries will be included on the list. So the Netherlands, Belgium, Cyprus and Luxembourg have got nothing to worry about. And for Switzerland and the United States, it seems like they're big and bad enough to be able to escape the list too. And the UK's lobbying hard to keep its satellite havens off the list too. We're thinking it might be quite a short list, which will be finalised next year. We'll be following developments on that. The EU Commission's set to examine whether or not a secret deal struck between the British government and car manufacturer Nissan to keep them in the country after it leaves the EU breaks state aid laws. It looks like the British government may have committed taxpayers pretty much to writing a blank cheque covering whatever the losses might be from new tariffs imposed if the UK loses access to the single market post-Brexit. And finally, Switzerland is in the hot seat this month to answer accusations that it's undermining women's rights around the world. They appeared before the United Nations Committee mandated to oversee compliance with the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, CEDAW. The committee asked them about the tax losses suffered particularly in poorest nations because of the impact of its financial secrecy policies and corporate tax rules. The Swiss, like many other secrecy jurisdictions, signed up to human rights conventions which commit them to avoiding policies that undermine the rights of women at home or beyond its borders. An interesting one. We'll bring you more on that when we can. Those are the Tax Justice News headlines. Now we're going to talk to John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network for his take on this month. Okay, John, we're in a new era this month, even though it might feel like we're going backwards. Donald Trump has won the elections in the United States and will be the next president. So what does a Trump presidency mean for tax justice? I mean, he said a lot of things, and some of those things he's backpedaling on. Apparently, he has published a tax plan on his website, so he does have a plan. Now, we know he's not a fan of taxes personally. He's the only US president to have refused to release his tax returns, so he's not into tax. And he hasn't actually paid tax for years through fairly legally dubious methods. And he says that makes him smart.
Yeah, at a personal level, he's not disclosed any information at all about his tax affairs and is under tax audit. He's clearly been involved in every single tax avoidance trick in the book, which is why he's been under investigation. When you look at what he's published on his website, the tax plan, and when you hear what he talks about publicly, huge public expenditure programs, Keynesian boost to the economy, and it does raise questions about whether he is a tax-cutting conservative or whether actually he's going to be a Keynesian booster. The signs we've seen so far are not at all promising. But we do know something from what he's put up on his website, and he's talking about dropping the corporate income tax rate from 35% down to 15%. But let's face it, the vast majority of US multinational companies aren't paying anything like the 35% nominal tax rate.
Exactly, and I've got to say that I've heard time and time again on the media, completely unchallenged, that the United States has the highest corporate tax in the developed world, which is absolute nonsense. There's a big difference between the statutory rate and the effective rate that's being paid.
That is quite right, and the media get it wrong time and time again, because when you start looking, as of course many people have done now, at US corporations, you see their effective tax rates are way down in single figures. In some cases, they're actually paying no tax and getting tax subsidies. So there's a nonsense there which people need to understand. Another thing which he has announced is a 10% tax amnesty on US multinational companies holding their profits offshore to avoid paying corporate income tax onshore. Now, this tax amnesty is the age-old Republican thing. Businesses are always pushing for a tax amnesty, saying, well, if you lower the tax rate, we'll bring our profits onshore. Now, every time a Republican president comes in with that tax amnesty proposal, this time it's we will only tax at 10%. There's a huge inflow of previously untaxed revenue profits into the US economy. Does it actually lead to investment and job creation? Well, the evidence of the recent times shows it doesn't do anything like that. So he might secure some income, but he won't achieve the kind of boost that he's hoping for the US economy. There won't be investment, there won't be jobs. As the Bush administration showed. So if we look at what he's proposing on, first of all, the tax amnesty and the cuts to corporate income tax, it's quite clear that he's engaging in a race to the bottom on tax competition. And that's something the rest of the world needs to be concerned about, because we're seeing an acceleration of tax competition pressures and this race to the bottom across the entire world. Even countries like Japan are now getting in on that act, and that's likely to lead to a vicious downward spiral. That can only cause harm. At the level of individuals, Trump plans to eliminate the federal estate tax. That's inheritance tax to people outside the United States. So they're going to get rid of the federal estate tax. This is something that the ultra-wealthy have been dreaming about for years, because it's only the top 1%, even less than 1% taxpayers, who pay this. So it's going to be the millionaires and the billionaires, people like Trump himself, who will be considerably better off. And at the same time, his much-vaunted tax cuts for the middle classes will arguably give the biggest tax breaks to the millionaires. To summarise, to try to make some sense of what we know so far, what we think we know so far, this is a plutocrat's president. Tax cuts for the rich, tax amnesties for the big multinational companies, higher taxes for lower-income households, tax competition at the international level. Very possibly he'll repeal Dodd-Frank.
Right, and the Dodd-Frank Act was passed after the financial crisis to protect taxpayers and consumers and citizens from another crisis.
Quite right. And with it, we'll see the end of country-by-country reporting requirements in the United States and project-by-project reporting requirements, which were built into the Dodd-Frank Act. No sign whatsoever of any intention to crack down on tax haven abuse. Plutocrats will, of course, be very cheerful. Those who have lost out to globalisation don't have much to cheer about.
OK. And he says as well that he wants a temporary moratorium on all financial regulation. So, I mean, what he could have done with that big windfall of bringing those offshore profits back into the United States could have been really quite revolutionary, actually. But, you know, if you're proposing income tax cuts could cost up to $7 trillion, you can see sort of robbing Peter to pay Paul, and the same sort of levels of inequality trends that we've seen are just going to continue.
Well, I think that's right. There's no sign whatsoever of how he will be able to push forward this gigantic infrastructural spend, which will boost the economy, no question about it. There will be jobs in the short term around this. Sadly, I see no sign whatsoever that that infrastructure spend will make the kind of transformation, particularly the kind of climate change transformation, in other words, the shift to a Green New Deal, where a huge amount of infrastructure spend goes on green technologies, green energy, green transport systems. No sign whatsoever of moving in that direction. So is this likely to be a progressive presidency which will tackle the inequality, invest in the kind of long-term infrastructure that will transform America? No signs whatsoever of that happening.
Yeah, and the Tax Justice Network's been saying for a while that the ultimate dream is to abolish the corporate income tax completely, and that's really the last remaining big tax on capital. Right, well, you never know, he might just get impeached within his first year, I suppose. Let's go to France now, because we've reported before on the TaxCast how France was trailblazing again by setting up a public register of trusts. And we've talked about the importance of registers of trusts and not just a register of the real owners of companies, because of the kind of the stampede that could happen as a result, with people looking for a new secrecy vehicle of choice. What's happened in France is quite interesting, because a US national living in France has successfully challenged the public nature of the French Registry of Trusts on the basis that it was infringing her privacy rights.
Well, that's right. And let's be clear about it. It is a setback, but we need to be quite nuanced about that. There was certainly it was a step forward having a registry of trusts and making part of that information public. But what the ruling has said is that it is an infringement of privacy insofar as it releases information about the long-term intentions of the person who created, settled that trust, because she was doing it in order to pass on her estate to future beneficiaries, presumably family and relatives, and she didn't want that information to be known before her death. And that was the context of this ruling. They have ruled that it was an infringement of her right to privacy insofar as it would reveal information about her future intentions there. In my opinion, the best arrangement would be a requirement for the trustees and the settlors to inform the authorities of the existence of the trusts, of their role as settlor and trustees, for that information to be made publicly available. I don't think there's an infringement on privacy at all. I don't think it's necessary for the information about beneficiaries to be made publicly available. But I do think that both the trustees and the settlors should have a joint legal obligation to inform the authorities of who the beneficiaries are. Trusts matter for a number of reasons. First of all, trusts are one of the key building blocks of any sophisticated offshore tax evasion, tax avoidance structure.
Right, because family trusts are not the only use, obviously. This is just one aspect of a bigger picture.
That's correct. Trusts are very widely used. The Tax Justice Network does not have a position where we oppose the use of trusts. We think that it's important that trusts are made more transparent. You cannot successfully challenge and push for more information about company ownership information unless you do the same for trusts, because it doesn't help us in the slightest to know that a company belongs to an offshore trust. We need to know who owns that trust. And that's why it's so important that trusts are brought into the equation. It doesn't necessarily require that we have full public information about who are the beneficiaries.
Right, so this is about ownership more than anything else, transparency about ownership.
That's absolutely right, because the trick for close to a century in using offshore tax havens, places like Jersey and Bermuda and British jurisdictions which specialise in the creation of trusts, which are just a legal arrangement, nothing more. The trick here is to use the trust as the underlying building block. It's the trust that owns the company. It's the company that holds the assets.
So there could be a way forward with this where the beneficiaries themselves could be not made public, whereas we're talking about a public registry with this information about ownership, this very critical information, and no reason whatsoever why that shouldn't happen.
Absolutely none whatsoever. I mean, I've talked to people in the trust industry and their lawyers and so on, and they will say, oh, it costs a great deal of money. That's just not true. It doesn't cost any more money than registering a company does, and that's hardly a big expense. So the cost side is just not an issue. On the privacy side, I can see why there might be some concerns about public disclosure of who the beneficiaries are, but in the case of the settlers and the trustees, I can see no privacy argument whatsoever.
Thanks, John. John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. About half of all world trade takes place through tax havens. There's a huge, powerful enabler industry helping multinational companies run rings around tax authorities everywhere. Lawyers, accountancy firms, banks. Even the wealthiest nations are losing billions in tax revenue every year, so you can imagine how serious it is for countries in the global south. This month, the TaxCast looks at a very practical solution that's being put to the test: tax inspectors without borders. Because make no mistake, there's a war going on, and defences are needed urgently. A few years back on the TaxCast, I reported on miners in Zambia who were paying more tax from their wages than the mining company they worked for was paying in corporate taxes. Xavier Mwamba, the Centre for Trade Policy and Development, investigated the tax affairs of just one mining company at the time. And if you were ever in any doubt as to what a huge difference increased tax revenue can make to people, Xavier gives us a great example here.
Recently, the government announced changes to the tax regime for the mining sector, which doubled the minerality tax and part of the expenditure where that increased revenue is going to. On the social services side, they announced that they're going to be providing free education up to a certain level and free Medicare. People can't afford for their children and for women. Also, the government of Zambia is now pushing a just transition program, which would ensure that the services are brought closer to where they're most needed. All these policy programs, all these social services, need extra money, and the government made it clear that it's the tax changes that will allow government to raise this sort of money.
So, real differences to real people. And after all, nation states across the world have promised to protect and uphold a whole series of human rights. Those rights require resources, hard cash. This is Dr. Atiya Waris of Nairobi University.
Right, and social and cultural rights. You sign up to the International Council.
So the hard cash may not be specifically incorporated into these treaties and conventions, that's a shame, but nations are expected to maximise the resources available to them, and that does mean that tackling corporate tax avoidance and evasion goes right to the heart of achieving human rights and development goals. And that's why the United Nations Development Programme and the OECD have launched Tax Inspectors Without Borders. It's a tax justice network idea, by the way. James Karanja is head of the Tax Inspectors Without Borders Secretariat.
It's an unfortunate reality in today's world that multinational enterprises are often running circles around tax authorities in developing countries. Tax administrations in developing world often lack capacity to ensure that multinational corporations pay their fair share of taxes, particularly given the complexities involved in accessing information and understanding complexities of international business. What we've seen is developing countries now are taking a very keen interest in being able to enhance their own domestic resource mobilization in the face of diminishing aid. And the highly publicized revelations of complex schemes of illicit financial activity and tax evasion that have been a real hindrance to the ability to deliver public service.
And that's because some of the tax schemes companies have in place are incredibly complex, shifting profits through several jurisdictions. It's an absolute minefield wherever business is being done. Ironically, governments in the wealthiest and most powerful nations, who are also among the donors for Tax Inspectors Without Borders, have actually been cutting back drastically on their tax authority staff. Canada's the only exception to the rule, I believe, recently announcing it was going to invest heavily in building up its capacity. Smart. Anyway, back to Tax Inspectors Without Borders. So, James, how do you go about setting up these kinds of projects in each country? How does this support system work?
Okay, so the Secretariat is essentially a matchmaking service, Naomi. We bring together tax inspectors who want to help these developing countries that are in need of assistance. So we would disseminate this information out there, provide the toolkits to the tax administrations, and this would help them to make a formal request to us and provide the relevant information we need so that we could then identify a suitable expert to send into their countries. So the way we work is that we get the audit expert to go into a country, assist the auditors in a country to pick up the skill and the ability to recover tax from some of these multinationals. What this brings us is the ability to bring tax audit experts to share their knowledge and skills with tax administrations in developing countries using a targeted real-time learning by doing approach.
And the idea is as well that eventually the knowledge and training will be shared south to south. So in other words, global south countries will support each other in future to build a capacity. There have been a number of pilot projects in different countries. Can you tell me how you feel it's going so far?
Yeah, sure. I mean, first of all, the initiative has grown in leaps and bounds since we launched in 2015. And we have several programs currently running in Liberia, Nigeria, Jamaica, Ghana, Lesotho, Ethiopia, Zimbabwe, Costa Rica, Georgia, and Zambia, with several more due to be set up in 2017. And the areas we're focusing on, the main areas of interest, have been in mining, dealing with financial institutions, manufacturing, and telecommunications. So the results of the programs that have so far been run have demonstrated great recoveries with in excess of $250 million. So we think this is clearly a demonstration of the value that tax inspectors brings to countries that take up the program. Clearly, having this amount of money available to them is really bound to open doors for these countries.
Right, so $250 million in terms of tax revenue that's been brought in as a direct result of this project.
That's correct, Naomi.
Wow, that is impressive. And I also see that Tax Inspectors Without Borders had a 3-year pilot project in Colombia where they supported the Tax Revenue Service there to increase its tax take tenfold from $3.3 million to $33 million. So anyway, back to this $250 million you mentioned. In what period of time was this extra revenue achieved?
Well, we're talking, I think this has been out of initiatives in the last at least 2 years. And remember, a lot of this was largely from the pilot projects. So what you expect to see in a scaled-up project that we've now kicked off with a huge list of countries, probably 10 or 20 others that have expressed an interest, is that we expect to reach a place where our recoveries exceed billions of dollars. And that we could also create this deterrent effect that multinationals know they no longer have a free space to do the sort of harmful activity we've seen happening in a lot of these developing countries.
Right. And sending out that signal is very important because until now they've been fairly free really to operate as they like and spirit money out of these countries.
Yes, that's correct. In one country, actually in Liberia, where we are, the tax administration had never actually conducted the audits before in critical sectors like mining. And being able to give them the capacity to do so, you could see is creating a real change on the ground. And this is the sort of impact we want to have, that multinationals know that tax administrations have the capacity to challenge harmful practices that they're engaged in. So we would like to see a situation where we have helped developing countries to build and recover billions of tax revenue from multinationals that have woven circles around governments. We would like to see a setting up of over 100 deployments in these countries to build capacity and skills of those tax administrations to the point where the multinationals know that we have a level playing field, whether you operate in Britain, whether you operate in Chad or in Bolivia. We want to see them practice in the same manner, paying the rightful fair tax wherever they're operating from.
And achieving that level playing field when it comes to corporate tax abuse is what we'd all like to see. Tax Inspectors Without Borders is still in its early days, and it operates within a challenging set of differing interests and histories. Will it matter, for example, that some of the donor nations are former colonial powers? James Karanja certainly believes not. And life's full of ironies. Among the donors supporting this project are G20 nations with big clout in the OECD, the body charged with reforming global tax rules and jointly driving this tax inspectors initiative. Some of the OECD member countries, the criticism goes, don't seem to be exactly in a rush to push through global reform of taxation and financial transparency that will ensure real structural change. Some of these same countries are the beneficiaries of the very practices this project seeks to support developing countries in building their defences against. All the more fitting then, perhaps, that they should be involved in stopping the bleeding of tax revenue and illicit flows from the global south into generally the global north. There's also strong feeling about keeping out of the picture the big accountancy firms who've helped multinationals undermine the tax take around the world. Wealthier nations have certainly failed to keep them at a healthy distance in their own domestic contexts. We've reported on state capture by the Big Four on the tax cast. So far, while the British have drawn criticism for contracting of all firms PricewaterhouseCoopers to audit their project expenses, no one's yet been unwise enough to involve the Big Four accountancy firms in actually advising tax authorities in developing countries for Tax Inspectors Without Borders. Let's hope it stays that way. I'll definitely revisit Tax Inspectors Without Borders on the TaxCast and see how the project has navigated all these choppy waters. I really hope to be reporting on the recovery of billions. That's it for this month. You've been listening to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next month.